So we're holding on Pei Bei's, Amud Bei's, the last words. Good morning, Avram Moshe.
Good morning, Avram.
Last words. So the Gemara previously, yes, we're going to restart now. The Mishnah had talked about,
which Daf are we on?
Pei Bei's, Amud Bei's, at the very bottom, the last words. The Mishnah had talked about a case of a Kohen who is an androgynous, which means that he has the genitals of both male and female, where if he married a Bas Yisrael, then Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon said she can eat truma. The point being, in other words, so now there's two ways of understanding it. We had a whole machlokas over the last couple of dafim between Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish. Are we talking about even truma d'Oraisa? Or are we talking about only truma d'Rabbanan? Because after all, being an androgynous, it's a suffix, whether it's a man or a woman. If it's really a woman, then his marriage, of course, is not a match, or a woman is, of course, not a marriage. And then there's nothing to be matter her in eating truma. So there's two ways of looking at that. So now continuing on this topic of androgynous. So Omar Rav, lesson amasnis in Mikami Braisa. Good morning, Aaron. So Rav says we set aside the Mishnah in favor of a Braisa. In other words, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi is saying that an androgynous' wife can eat truma, implying, as we said, that Rabbi Yossi holds according to Rabbi Yochanan, it would mean Rabbi Yossi holds we consider him a vadei zacher, and according to Rish Lakish, we consider him at least a suffix zacher. But Rav says when you consider a Braisa where Rabbi Yossi says differently, then you have to say that Rabbi Yossi apparently changed his mind. The Tanya, because we learned a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi, an androgynous berya b'fnei atzmahu. Rabbi Yossi says in this Braisa that an androgynous is a berya b'fnei atzmahu. It's a creature of a type of its own. The Chachamim could not decide whether it's male or female. Now, Tosfos actually discusses over here and says that when we say berya b'fnei atzmahu, Tosfos says, we don't mean that it's in effect a third gender. We just mean, in other words, that we say that it is exactly that it's a suffix whether it's a male or female. So Rav would be saying in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi is saying that he's considered a zacher to the extent that he can give his wife truma, which again according to Rabbi Yochanan means that he considers him that means even truma d'oraisa. So now Rav is saying, on the other hand, given that in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi is saying that it's a suffix, then it means Rabbi Yossi changed his mind relative to what it says in the Mishnah. Now, of course, we're going to ask how we know it's not the other way around. We'll get back to that in a minute. But the point is that he's saying that the Mishnah and the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi's opinion, contradict themselves. So therefore, it means that he changed his mind. Now that Ramban has a different explanation, he says that no, berya b'fnei atzma does in fact mean that Rabbi Yossi is saying, in effect, it's neither man nor woman, but rather something else. Anyway, the point is, again, that would be different than our Mishnah, where in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are saying that he's enough like a man to be marrying a woman and as a Kohen being, and now she as a Kohen's wife being able to eat truma. So the Gemara says, Adraba. On the contrary, shouldn't we say that we ignore the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah and say that in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi may be saying that it's very b'fnei atzma, but in the Mishnah, he says that it's enough vadai to be considered that it's vadai enough. And by the way, also Rishonim discussed over here that what it might be is what the Gemara may be discussing, not just the fact that it said that androgynous koyin shenosav asisroma achilu b'truma. Fine, that might be like we said before because he's a suffix. But what happened in the Mishnah? We have that statement. Then we have Rabbi Yehuda saying a statement about a tumtum, and then continuing on another thing with androgynous, that he marries, that he takes a wife in marriage and is not taken in marriage. In other words, that we consider him for that purpose to be a man. So the idea would be, in other words, that we would understand that is the continuation of Rabbi Yossi's and Rabbi Shimon's statement in the Mishnah. It just interjected with a statement of Rabbi Yehuda. So in other words, the fact that we would say noise avaloi nisa implies that he would be, that we'd consider him to be a zacher vadai to the extent that we would say that he marries a wife rather than being married as a wife. Mm-hmm. But now in the Braisa, again, Rabbi Yossi is saying that he's buried with an asma. So the question is,
in the discussion,
what?
in the discussion that we had on the Sris, we focused on the fact that whether or not he could have children. Why don't we just say the same?
One second. That was as far as Yibum. So Yibum, we're not dealing with over here. We're dealing with as far as Truma.
No, I understand that.
Yes.
I understand that. But to determine whether or not he could come into the Kahal, we
not at all. That was what he did when he was injured or damaged or whatever after birth, when he's a Swiss Adam, that's different. A Swiss Chama, we never had a problem with him coming into the Kahal, and an Adjurgenus neither.
Why can't we focus the discussion on whether or not he can have children?
Whether he can have children or not, he still has, if we say he's a man, he still has a mitzvah to get married just for the reason alone that we said that Lo Tov HaYosa Adam Levado. So therefore, so
why does he have a mitzvah to get married if he cannot have children?
Because you still have a mitzvah, because still a person, a man shouldn't be alone. We had a whole sugya about it on Daf Samach Beis Samach Gimel, that even if there's no children possible, there's still an inyan to get married.
Anyway, so why do we apply one rule to the Sris and another rule to the androgynous tzumtum?
I don't understand what you're asking. A Swiss Adam also has a mitzvah to get... One second. A Swiss Adam also has a mitzvah to get married. He just can't marry a Bas Yisrael. He can only marry a Mamzeres you can marry a Gioras or what have you, whether you're going to be able to marry a Mamzeres or Macholikos, actually, whatever. Anyway, the point is, he also should get married. There's some limitation who he can get married to. In the case of a Swiss Hammer and in the case of an androgynous, there's no such limitation. That's all. But now, we're discussing the question of androgynous. So let's focus on that.
Otherwise.
Yeah. So the question is, the Gemara says, Ad Rav Lesa LeBrais LeKamemas Nisin. So why is Rav saying that we ignore the Mishnah in favor of the Braisa and say that it means that Rav Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah doesn't represent his final opinion? It means that he changed his mind. Why don't we say the other way around? We set aside the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah. And the answer is Midashavte Rav Yossi LeBar Zuge, because we see in the Mishnah we have Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon saying this, whereas in the Braisa we only have Rav Yossi. Therefore, Shmamina Hoderbe, that means that he changed his mind. Now, how does that show that he changed his mind? So Rashi explains, and the Ritva teaches out more in detail what Rashi means is, if in fact it meant that in the Braisa we knew that Rav Yossi says something in the, not we knew, that if we were saying that his opinion in the Mishnah represents his final opinion, then the Braisa would have said something like that. It would have said something, either it would have said Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon say such and such, or it would have said Rav Yossi says such and such, and Rav Shimon sticks to his original opinion. The fact that the fact that it mentions only Rav Yossi's opinion without saying that Rav Shimon also holds like him shows that he changed his mind, because otherwise we'd have to address Rav Shimon's opinion as well. That's a point, so Tosfos asks the question still, how does that show? Maybe it means that he changed his mind from the Braisa, that maybe it means that first he said the Braisa, and then later on he said the Mishnah. So there are a couple of answers on that. One of them, Tosfos Yishanim says, is because Mishnayos were composed before the Braisas. So therefore it's more logical that his opinion in the Mishnah is his first opinion, and later on he changed his mind in favor of what it says in the Braisa. But again, the Ritva says what Rashi is implying with his Pirush over here. Rashi just says briefly, he says that since in the Mishnah they're together and in the Braisa they're separate, then it shows they changed his mind. So the Ritva teaches us that if the Braisa had come first, if that was his first opinion and then he changed his mind in favor of what it says in the Mishnah, then the Braisa would have also told us what Rav Shimon's opinion is instead of only Rav Yehuda's. Okay, so therefore, so Rav says that we ignore the Mishnah in favor of the Braisa, meaning, in other words, that Rav Yossi's opinion in the Braisa, that it's Beri Bifnei Atzma, represents his final opinion. Whether the Halacha is like him, we're going to get to at the bottom of the offer. Shmuel, on the other hand, says, I agree that the Mishnah and the Braisa are contradicting each other on what Rav Yossi holds, because in the Mishnah, the implication seems to be that he's Vadei Zohar, and therefore that we said he marries a wife rather than being married to a husband. On the other hand, the Braisa is saying Beri Bifnei Atzma. So Shmuel says, ignore the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah. In other words, Rav Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah is his final opinion. So the Gemara says, Adrabba lesson on Asnissim, the Tamei Braisa. Shouldn't Shmuel be saying the other way around, that the Mishnah is set aside in favor of the Braisa? We find elsewhere that Shmuel is concerned for Das Yachid. When you have, in other words, sometimes you have in a Mishnah, you have an opinion of one individual Tana, and Shmuel is concerned that the Halacha may be like that and follows suit. We had a case back on Daf Mem Aleph. We had a case of a man was Makadish a woman. So we had over there that a man has a Shemeres, so you have a Shemeres Yavam, a woman who's waiting for Yibum. So her husband died. One of the brothers has to do Chalitza or Yibum with her. During the time when she's a Shemeres Yavam, then we said one of the other brothers was Makadish, her sister. Now, if he's married to her sister, then he doesn't do Chalitza or Yibum with the Yavama, because then she'd be an Erva to him. But now so what do we do? So Yehuda ben Seira said in the Mishnah that we tell him, wait to do Nisuin until one of your brothers does either chalitza or yibum, and then you can go ahead because otherwise you're marrying the achos kuka, the sister of a woman that you have zikah with her. So once they remove the zikah by chalitza or yibum, then you can go ahead and continue. You already did kedushin with her. Now you can continue and do nisuin with her. So Shmuel said in the Gemara over there that Shmuel said he said halacha could have been v'seira. And in fact, the Gemara mentions in Megillah, Rashi brings that in fact from there we get this general rule that Shmuel is choshesh for the yachid. So why don't we say the same thing over here? And the answer is hanimili kila misakra masnisim. The answer is Shmuel would only say that only when it doesn't uproot a Mishnah entirely. But when it would uproot a Mishnah, as in this case, in other words, if we were to say that we have to follow Rav Yossi's opinion in the Braisa, then it would mean that we're discarding completely what he's saying in the Mishnah over here. That we're not going to do. So therefore, that's what he means. Therefore, that since the very nice that a Braisa says one thing, but since the Mishnah says differently, then we have to pay more attention to the Mishnah. We're not going to be choshesh for the Das Yochid and the Braisa, because then that would remove the Mishnah altogether. By the way, I mean, the Ritva points out, we're not going to say, obviously, Shmuel is not choshesh for a Das Yochid every time, and we have Das Yochid all over the place in the Mishnayos, and Shmuel doesn't say the halacha like him. He means particularly when the Svara is very compelling. This idea that Rabbi Yossi is saying that the androgynous is a very b'fnei atzmo, but like Shmuel b'chachamim, is a very compelling svara, and therefore he would say that represents Rabbi Yossi's opinion, and even that would be the halacha, were it not for the fact that Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah contradicts that, where Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah is implying that it's more of a vadei zacher, at least for purposes of marriage. Another point, by the way, that we're showing him explain why we said before that when going back to Rav's opinion that we set aside the Mishnah in favor of the Braisa, since Rabbi Yossi uses the expression loyi chriyo by chachamim, that the chachamim could not decide about that, the implication is that before that there had been a discussion which resulted in what we say in our Mishnah, that he's considered a zacher, but now Rabbi Yossi is coming in and saying, you know what, I changed my mind, I realized you're acting as though we've determined it definitively, but no, loy hichriyo by chachamim. In fact, the chachamim can't definitively determine one way or the other. So that's also a reason to say that it reports to Rav that represents his final opinion. Well, again, Shmuel is saying that not, because then that would mean discarding the Mishnah entirely, and Shmuel says we can't do that. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amri be Rav mishmei de Rav. So they said in the Yeshiva of Rav, which the Gemara is going to say on Amud Beis, that this refers specifically to Rav Huna said this, Mishmei de Rav, in the name of Rav, they said, Halacha k'Rav Yossi ba'andiroginus uva harkava, that Rav had said that Halacha is like Rav Yossi as far as the matter of androgynous, which is what we were just talking about, and also in a matter of harkava, in a matter of a din as far as grafting trees together, which the Gemara is going to quote and discuss in a minute. So the halacha is like a Yossi in this matter of androgynous. Now what we mean, Rav had said before that it means that we're following Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Braisa. That's not the last word on it though, because in fact Rashi says that this Amri Bei Rav is actually disagreeing with what we've quoted before, that Rav said that we follow the Braisa to determine Rabbi Yossi's opinion rather than the Mishnah. In other words, according to this Amri Bei Rav, we would be saying that, no, we follow Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah and not the one in the Braisa. Now, why would that be? One point is One point is, because all the things we're going to list over here, and Jurgenus and Haukava, and the next things also that Shmuel is going to list as well, all of those are ones where we find Rabbi Yossi together with Rabbi Shimon. Now, we find that only in the Mishnah. We find that only in our Mishnah. In the Braisa, we said only Rabbi Yossi. So therefore, if we're saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in each of those things, the implication would seem to be that that we're talking about Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah rather than his opinion in the Braisa. Which would mean, in other words, that we would say that the androgynous is considered Zohar Vada. That's the point of Rashi and Tosfos. On the other hand, different other Rishonim say that not. In particular, the Rambam's shita about it is interesting. The Rambam paskins about an androgynous. On the one hand, we say that he's a Sophic, like Rabbi Yossi is saying in the Braisa, therefore, the Rambam paskins the androgynous' wife cannot eat Truma because he might not be a man at all. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins, like Rabbi Eliezer at the end of the Mishnah, who says that if a man has relations with an androgynous, then he's chayiv misa, then he's chayiv skila, which means that he considers him a vadei zocher. So the question is, how does that work? And one answer is, the Rashba offers an answer that the Rambam basically holds like Rabbi Yossi, but he says, as far as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, we're going to revisit this matter of having relations with the androgynous, the Rambam understands the Gemara to be saying basically this Xeris HaKosu, that for that purpose, for the purposes of Bia, he's considered a man, and therefore if another man has relations with him, then he's Chayiv Skila. But not for any other purpose. For any other purpose, we would consider him a Suffet, and therefore, In particular, in connection with our Mishnah, then his wife would not be able to eat truma. So the Rambam learns, in other words, that when we say Amri Beirav Mishmei Zerav Halachok Rabbi Yosi Bandroginus, we mean like Rabbi Yosi in the Braisa, not like Rabbi Yosi in the Mishnah. Okay. Anyway, so that's as far as Androgynous, and also as far as Haukav, which we'll quote in a minute what that is. Or Shmuel Amar. Shmuel says the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosi Bekoshi over Kiddush. As far as koshi, which is when a woman is having labor pains and is bleeding during it, which we'll talk about soon what that's all about, and as far as kiddush, as far as the din in kelaya kerem, where it's called kiddush because the expression is tareza kiddush, as we're going to have at the bottom of the omud, and the expression in the pasuk, we talked about this the other day in the gemara, the expression in the pasuk is pen tikdash hamaleya, so therefore, so we use the word kiddush for that. So now we're going to assume that it means that Shmuel is arguing with Rab on these things, that Shmuel is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi only in koshi and kiddush, implying but not an androgynous in our cover. But we're going to see as we go through whether in fact that's the case. So we have four dinim, in other words, two in which Rab says the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi and two in which Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So let's go through the four of them. Androgynous Hodam Moron, as far as the androgynous, we said that Rav says the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi with the androgynous. Again, what that means, whether he means Rabbi Yossi of the Mishnah or Rabbi Yossi of the Braisa, that's you have the machloikas between Rashi and the Rabbah. Next, Haukava, what's the statement of Rabbi Yossi regarding Haukava, regarding grafting trees, where Rav says the halacha is like him? So the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shvius, Ein Noitin. Now you have like this. There's a concept called Tosfos Shvius. In Moed Katan, the Gemara discusses it. So we had it in our shiur a few months back. That we know, of course, you're not allowed to work the land during Shmita itself. There's also a concept called Tosfos Shvius that for a certain period of time before Shvius, 30 days, then you're also not allowed to do certain agricultural work. And you have the Gemara in Moed Katan there as a whole sugya about what parts of that are Daraisa and what parts are Darabanan, and it's only Bizman Shabbos and Mefesh Kayim, etc. Anyway, part of it is Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Anyway, so in Noitin, you're not allowed to plant, but in Mavrichin, and you're not allowed to bend down a twig, which is you take, for example, from a grapevine or some other tree like that, you bend down a twig and bury one end of it in the dirt, and eventually that end develops roots of its own, and then eventually you break it off or cut it off the parent tree, and you have it's called cloning. That's when you have the word cloning in English, that comes from that, because you literally have a genetic copy of the original plant. Anyway, so you're not allowed to do that. The in Markivin, you're not allowed to graft a branch from one tree onto another tree. Erev Shvius, during the year before Shmita, Pachas Mishloshim Yom, Lifnei Rosh Hashanah, within 3 days before Rosh Hashanah, because that's already, you're in Tosfos Shvius. The Inotta Behivrech Behivtiv, if you did any of those things, Yaker, then you have to uproot it. So now, with it, now you have a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, call how kavash in a kelepis b'shloisha yamim. Any grafting that doesn't actually attach within 3 days, shuv in a kelepis, is not going to attach afterwards. Meaning, therefore, that he says that you need 3 days at least. So in other words, now the Tanakama of this Mishnah is saying that you need 30 days for the graft or whichever it is to take effect. So if you did it within 30 days before Shemitah, then you have a problem, because now it's actually finishing taking effect during Shemitah. He's saying 30 days. Rabbi Yehuda says 3 days. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon only shtei shabbosis. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say you need 2 weeks. Ve'omer Amar Rabbi Nachman, Amar Rabbi Barabua. And now let's clarify what that means. Everybody agrees that you need the 30 days before Shemitah. So therefore, L'divrei ha'omer, Shloshim, according to the Tanakhama, that you need 30 days, really what it means is sort of Shloshim u'Shloshim. You need 60 days, because what you need is that the graft, or whatever it is, should finish taking effect before Tosfos Shvi'is begins. So since Tosfos Shvi'is itself begins 30 days before Shemitah, then you need, and according to the Tanakhama, you need 30 full days for the graft or the clone or whatever to take effect, then therefore you need to have done it no less than 60 days before Shemitah. And the divrei ha'omer shloisha, and appointed of Yehuda that you need 3 days. It means sort of shloisha or shloishim. You need 3 days. 3 days for it to take root or to graft on, and 3 days for Tosfos Shvi'is. And the divrei ha'omer shtei shabbosis, sort of shtei shabbosis or shloishim. And appointed of Yosi and Rav Shimon, you would need 44 days, because you need 2 weeks plus 30 days. So now, Rav is saying the halacha is like Rav Yosi in that you need 44 days. Now, Rashi is explaining that the whole discussion is as far as Tosfos Shvi'is. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, it's one thing, fine, sure, you're not allowed to do these things during Tosfos Shvi'is, when Tosfos Shvi'is is in effect, but to go so far as to say that you did them before Tosfos Shvi'is, and they're completing, it's taking root, or it's getting engrafted or whatever during those 30 days, to say to the extent that you should have to uproot it, that you should have to undo it because of that, says Tosfos, no. Rather, that part about the 30 days is referring to the dinim of Orla. If we want, now you plant a tree, or you graft a tree, for example, or you clone a tree, you're going to have dinim of Orla come into the picture. So now the question is, you want to be able to have that a year, you want to have that a period of time is going to count as a year. We know that there's a certain amount of time that can be considered a year. How much of that do you need? So now is where you have this three-way machloikas. So in other words, Tosfos is explaining that there are two different dinim in our Mishnah, two unrelated dinim. Number one, that you're not allowed to plant and graft, etc., within 30 days before Shvi'is. A separate din, when it comes to Erla, that if you want that the calendar year that's ending should count as the first year of Erla for this tree, then you need to do it a certain amount of time before Rosh Hashanah in order for that to be counted as a full year. And there you have the machlokas, whether you need 33 or 44 or 60 days. So now we're saying, halacha is like Rav Yosi, meaning, in other words, that if you planted a tree more than 44 or more days before Rosh Hashanah, so any time from the 16th of Av or earlier, then that year, that partial year from the 16th of Av until the end of the year counts as the first year of Erla for this tree, and now you only need 2 more years. Okay. As opposed to, had you planted it after Tetzayin Av, then that would not count as its first year, and you would actually have to count its first year beginning from Rosh Hashanah. The Rambam Paskin similarly, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Anyway. So Rav is saying that the halacha is like Rav Yosi in Harkava, and Rav Shimon in Harkava, meaning that it's 2 weeks plus 30 days. Okay. Now, we said that Shmuel Amar B'Koshi V'Kiddush. Shmuel had said the halacha is like Rav Yosi when it comes to Koshi and when it comes to Kiddush. What do we mean by Koshi? The Tanan. Now, we learn in a Mishnah in Nida as follows. Now, the background for this is that we know a woman can be Nida. There's a 7-day period when she can be a nida, and then after that there comes an 11-day period when she's not expected to bleed, and if she does during that time, then she's a zava, and then you have, if it's 1 or 2 days, she's a zava ktana, 3 or more days, she's a zava gdola. Now, what happens if when a woman is about to give birth, she usually starts bleeding. So now, does that blood count as dam ziva? So the halacha is that not, because we say ziva has to be from something that's called the pasuk says dom yezova bivsara, implying that it has to be something that something natural from her own body, not something that's caused by an external factor such as her such as labor. So therefore, so the point is. The point is, in other words, that normally when a woman gives birth, she's going to be tomei leida. She's going to be, as the Torah tells us at the beginning of Parashat Tazria, she's going to be tomei for 7 or 14 days, depending whether it was a boy or a girl, and afterwards she has yemei tohar for 33 or 66 days, etc. Now, what about the fact that the what about the fact that for a couple of days before the birth, she was probably bleeding? That doesn't make her a zaba. We don't say that after the birth, she also needs tara, for she also needs 7 clean days in order to be tohar from zoiv, because we say she's not a zaba. But there has to be a limitation to that. There comes a point when if she bleeds before the birth for more than a certain amount of time, or there's different other details that it talks about there in the Mishnayos and the Gemara and Nida, then yes, we consider her to be Yeledes Bezoiv, that she's considered when she gave birth, she was a Zava, and then in order to be Tahor, she's going to need, besides the 7 or 14 days, she's also going to need 7 clean days. Meaning, in other words, let's say, if she's Yeledes Bezoiv, if we say that she's considered a Zava when she gives birth, it would mean, so let's say, for example, she has a boy. Now, what would it be if she hadn't been Yeledes Bezoiv? She would have 7 days of Tumah. Then after that, even if she's still continuing to bleed, then that's okay, because those are 33 Yemei Tara. We don't do this nowadays. The fact that we don't do this nowadays is neither here nor there. We're talking about the original Din Minatora. So the next 33 days, even if she continues bleeding, she's considered Tahor for her husband. She's Mechusa Kapara. We learned earlier in our Perek that she has to wait till the end of the 40 days to bring her korban and to be able to eat Kodshim. And she has to wait till the end of the 40 days, we said, to eat Truma. And then on the 41st day, when she brings her korban, she can eat Kodshim. But during those 33 days, she's Mutter to her husband. She's Tahor as far as eating Maisa Sheni and Mutter to her husband. In other words, the point is, we ignore the fact that she bled before the birth. We don't consider her to be a Zava. But in the cases when we do, in the cases where the bleeding makes her a Zava, as there are various scenarios, one of which we're going to be talking about over here, then we say that she needs, at some point during that time, she's going to need 7 clean days, just like a regular Zava, in order to be Tahor. So she's going to need, there'll be the 7 days after the birth. Let's say she's bleeding during all those 7 days. Then you have after that 33 days. Sometime during that 33 days, there's going to need to be 7 clean days in order for her to be Tahor for her husband. That's Yeledes Bezoiv. So now the Mishnah describes that it now. So again, so if she's bleeding because of the impending labor, then that's called Dam Koshi. That's called blood from hard labor. It doesn't make her necessarily a Zava. But how long can this dam toshi be going on for before we do consider it dam ziva? So Reb Meir says it can be 40 or 50 days, which Gemara explains over there. It means if she's a healthy woman, then 40 days, and if she's a sick woman, then 50 days. So even if it's that long before the birth, she's already bleeding, Reb Meir would say that's considered dam toshi, and therefore she's not a zava from it. Reb Yehuda Omer Daya Chodcha. Rabbi Yehuda says it's enough to say that any blood during that month, she's not a Zava, but not before that month. And actually, Rashi brings over here, based on the Gemara over there, that what it really means is a calendar month. In other words, we don't say month of a year doesn't mean 29 or 30 days. A month of a year means the calendar month, the page on the calendar, so to speak, in which she gave birth. So in other words, if she gave birth, let's say on the second day, let's say she gave birth on Bay's ear, then it would mean any bleeding that took place on Aleph or Bay's ear is considered Dam Toshi, doesn't make her a Zava, but any bleeding that took place earlier than that on Lamed Nissen or Koptes Nissen or whatever would make her a Zava, says Rabbi Yehuda, because the Gemara explains over there, he considers that the fact that they blow the shofar to announce it's Rosh Chodesh, that makes it, in effect, that makes it now officially the 9th month of her pregnancy. So that's what he says. So in other words, it comes out. Sometimes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could have a very short amount of time of koshi. Like we're saying, if she gives birth on the 2nd of the month, she only has 1.5 days of it. On the other hand, if she gives birth on the 29th of the month, then she has 4 weeks when the blood can be considered dam koshi. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Omim Ein Kishu Yossi Mishtei Shabbosis. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say that the maximum amount of kishui is 2 weeks. So in other words, according to them, if she started bleeding 15 or more days before the birth, then she will be a Zava when she gives birth. And again, she's going to need 7 clean days at some point in order to become Tahor. So now, Rav is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi and Shmuel is saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon in that it's 2 weeks. Now, Rashi goes on to mention also that you also have a case. All of this is talking about where the bleeding continued continuously, and then afterwards she gave birth. If you had a break in between, then we don't go according to any of these figures anyway. Then she's here. Let us preserve anyway, because the fact that there was a break in between, and the Mishnah describes over there what kind of break we're talking about, whether we're talking about some labor pains or from bleeding or whatever. Then she's here. Let us preserve. But here we're not getting into that level of detail. The point is that we're saying that even the koshi itself, even if it's somoch l'leida, even if it goes right away, flows right away into the birth, then how long can it be considered dam koshi? So we're saying maximum 2 weeks. Any more than that, and it would be considered ziva. Okay. Now, kiddush, what's the case that Shmuel says, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, regarding kiddush? The Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah in Kilayim. And now we know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to plant grapes and grain together, and if you do, then they become osavano, they become kalayaker. Part of that is that it's not just if they're planted near each other, it's also if a grapevine is overshadowing, if the leaves of it are hanging over grain that's growing nearby. Some of the Rishonim say that maybe that is only the Rabbanan, but still, yeah. Anyway, so I'm a sakach gafnei, I'll gab it for us, yeshachaber. Suppose a person does that. Reuven has grapevines, Shimon has nearby wheat growing, and Reuven takes his grapevines and makes them overhang Shimon's door. Hareza kiddush, so he makes them also banah, b'chayev b'chriyosa, and he's chayev to pay because he calls a hezek. Tosfos discusses actually that now there is something that Reb Meir holds. Of something called Dina de Gaimzi, which means even when you didn't directly cause a hezek, sometimes when you cause a hezek indirectly, you're also chayev. But over here, and so Rav Meir was following his opinion in that and saying Dina de Gaimzi. Tosfos says that actually maybe Rav Yossi would actually agree with Rav Meir. Maybe actually Rav Yossi would agree with Rav Meir that if kiddush chayev bach miyosei, but he's saying over here that you're not mekadosh in the first place. Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon omrim ein adam oisir dava she'ena shaloi. Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon say a person cannot aser something that doesn't belong to him. Meaning, in other words, they're saying that the fact that he made those grapevines overshadow the tzvua doesn't change anything because it's not his to make aser. And therefore, they say he's not chayev. So that's what Tosfos says. Maybe they would agree that if, in fact, he made it chayev, they made it osur, he would be chayev to pay because dinah d'gami. But maybe in this case, they're just saying he's not making it osur in the first place because not his. Tosfos, by the way, and the Mishnah, by the way, in Kilayim goes on to mention over there an actual case where they passed him that way and they said in an osur davar shein shaloi. Tosfos asked the basic question. I mean, would you say the same logic if a person puts nevela into somebody else's food? Would you say that he's not asking it because it's not his? What's the difference over here? So Tosfos says, because the difference is over here, it's something that depends on machshava. It's not in and of itself that every time you have grapevines growing near grain, it automatically becomes osur. To a certain extent, it depends on a person's machshava, because, for example, you have a case Tosfos mentions also in the Sefer Kilayim where a person notices he's going to his vineyard and he notices in a distance that there are vegetables or whatever growing over there, and he says I can't reach it yet, it's going to take time for me to get there, but as soon as I get there I'm going to uproot it. Then we say even if meanwhile it continued growing, by the time he was able to get there it doesn't become also banah because he had in mind to uproot it. So the same way Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon can be saying, since it depends on machshava, then you're not able to answer somebody else's thing with something that depends only on machshava. When you're talking about maise, when you're talking about putting nevela or basa b'chalav in, then that's different. Tosfos Yeshanim also says, because by kilayim maybe you have a special mute in the pasuk, since it says sodcha lo sizra kilayim, so Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon are taking the view only if it's your field, if it's not yours, then gzeiros hakosav, that it doesn't work. Anyway, so now Shmuel is saying that halacha is like Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon in that he's not mekadosh, that he's not answering the other guy's grain. Okay, the Gemara says ibayluhu. So now we said Rav had said the halacha is like Rav Yossi in two things, and Shmuel had said in two other things. Now, bandrugnus mali amar Shmuel. What would Shmuel say as far as the andrugnus? Does he say that like Rav that the halacha is like Rav Yossi or not? And the answer is Toshma. We can prove. Because we said, when we discussed the Mishnah versus the Braisa, we said that there we just said Shmuel upset. Now the Gemara is spelling out that he said to Rav Onan that we ignore the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah. In other words, that when it comes to determining what Rav Yossi's opinion is, we don't look at the Braisa, we look at the Mishnah. But the fact that he's mentioning that point implies that yes, he agrees that Halacha is like Rav Yossi. So according to Rashi's understanding, it would come out that Rav and Shmuel ultimately are arguing which version of Rav Yossi do we follow? Do we follow the one in the Mishnah or the one in the Braisa? Because according to Rashi's explanation, rather, we had two different opinions within what Rav himself holds. We had one opinion that Rav says look at the Braisa, another opinion that says look at the Mishnah, and we're saying that Rav follows that. And now we'd be saying, according to that Shmuel agrees with that. On the other hand, according to the Rambam's understanding of it, we'd be saying that ultimately Rav and Shmuel are disagreeing. Rav would be following the Braisa, and Shmuel would be following the Mishnah. But they would both agree that Halacha is like Rav Yossi. Fine. Hakava Mali Omer Shmuel. What would Shmuel say as far as the din of Hakava, where Rav had said the halacha is like Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon, that you need 2 weeks for it to take effect plus 30 days? We said, according to Rashi, you have to do it before Shmita at least 44 days, and according to Rabbeinu Hanan on Tosfos, it means that as far as Orla, you have to do it at least 44 days. We said grafting. So we're using that as shorthand for that whole din over there about grafting and cloning and planting and so forth. Yeah. So what would Shmuel say as far as that? So the answer is Toshma. We can prove. The Amal is Shmuel Rav Onan. Again, Shmuel said to Rav Onan, Tony, Commander Amal, Shloisha. Teach according to the opinion over there of Rav Yehuda, who says that you need 3 days plus another 30. So in other words, he disagrees with Rav and says the halacha would be like Rav Yehuda, where instead Rav was saying the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. Okay. What about Koshi Mali Omer Rav? What does Rav say about the Koshi as far as the case of the woman who is bleeding before labor? How long before can we consider Dam Koshi rather than Dam Ziva? And the answer is Teku. We can't be sure what Rav would say about that. So therefore, by default, kind of the halacha is like Shmuel, is like Rav Yossi, because Shmuel explicitly says so. Usually when we have a matter in Dine Issa Vehetu, usually the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel, but here where we don't even know what Rav said, then we can accept what Shmuel said. What about Kiddush Mali Omer Rav? What would Rav say about the case of the grapevine and the grain? Omer Rav Yosef, Toshma, the Omer Rav Huna Omer Rav, ain halacha k Rav Yosef. Well, you see that Rav Huna says in the name of Rav, the halacha is not like Rav Yosef. So obviously, Shmuel is saying that the halacha is like Rav Yosef, and Rav is saying that not. However, Omer Le Abaya, but Abaya said to Rav Yosef, my chosis to samfas aha, what makes you decide that you should depend more on that statement of Rav Huna in the name of Rav, smoich aha. Rather rely on another one, the Amr of Ada, Amr Rav Halacha Rabbis, where Rav Ada says in the name of Rav, the Halacha is like Rabbis. So why are you preferring Rav Huna's understanding over Rav Ada's? And the answer is because Amri Bei Rav Manu Rav Huna. Because when we say in the Gemara Amri Bei Rav, it means that Rav Huna said it. Rav Huna Amr in Halacha. And Rav Huna is saying that Rav said the Halacha is not like that the Halacha is not like Rav Yossi. So therefore, in other words, we said before that he says the halacha is like Rav Yossi and I'm going to send out cover. And we're clarifying now that Amri Bei Rav is none other than Rav Huna. Then therefore, that means that in fact represents Rav's actual opinion. And it means, in other words, we're setting aside what Rav Ad said. So in fact, we would be saying that Rav is saying the halacha is not like Rav Yossi in this. The halacha is not like him, according to Rav, in the matter of Kiddush. Now, in the end, though, the Gemara seems to be kind of iffy about it. And in fact, the Rambam does paskin, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rav Yossi, that Ein Adam Osa Dabar Sheina Shaloi, and the Kesef Mishnah explains, because we're actually saying, the fact is, we're saying there are two different versions of what Rav said. And therefore, in this case, even though it's a matter of Issa V'Heter, where Shmuel clearly said the halacha is like Rav Yossi, then we can follow him. In fact, the Kesef Mishnah points out there seems to be an implication from the Yerushalmi that Rav would also agree with that, actually. Plus, you have also the fact that the Mishnah goes on to say over there, Maisa Rav, that there was an actual case of that, and they said, so that's another reason to pass them like that. Anyway, Rashi points out that actually the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that when it says Amri Bei Rav, it doesn't mean Rav Huna, it means Rav Hamnuna. So what does that mean? We're saying over here that Amri Bei Rav means Rav Huna. Rashi says it means like this. When Rav Huna says Amri Bei Rav, then obviously he's not quoting himself, so then we say he's quoting Rav Hamnuna. But when it just says, when the Summit of Gemara just says Amri Bei Rav, then it means it's Rav Huna speaking. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says, no, what the Gemara means over there is that, what the Gemara means over there is when it says Amri Bei Rav, so instead of, whenever you have that it says Ami Beirav, whenever it says Rav Huna says Ami Beirav, then you should read it not Rav Huna says, but rather Rav Hamnuna says Ami Beirav. Rav Hamnuna was a Talmud of Rav Huna. Actually, Tosfos discusses there were a couple of different Rav Hamnunas in Shas. One of them was a Talmud of Rav Huna. So in other words, that Gemara in Sanhedrin would be saying that whenever it says Omer Rav Huna Ami Beirav, really it's supposed to be Omer Rav Hamnuna Ami Beirav. Namely, that Rav Hamnuna is quoting his Rebbe, Rav Huna, as saying in the name of Rav, such and such. Okay. So that takes care of all these four cases where the halacha is or isn't like Rabbi Yossi as the case maybe. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tumtum, Rabbi Yehuda had said that a Tumtum, where it's a person where his genitals are covered up, or it's indistinct, and you can't tell whether he's a male or a female, if it turns out that he's a male, Rabbi Yehuda said, Lo Yachloitz, he should not do Chalitza, but Neshu Kisris, because he's like a Swiss, meaning even if he is a man, he's not going to be able to have children. And we learned earlier in the Perek, and we learned a few times in the Masechta, that a Swiss hammer is what we had the other day. We had a machlokas. We had the Mishnah on Rabbi Akiva. We had the Mishnah on Ein Tes and the Beis, where Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer argued over this point. Can a Swiss hammer do a valid chalitza or not? Rabbi Akiva said no, because he never had shasa kosher. Rabbi Eliezer said yes, because you could conceivably cure him. But the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore Swiss Hammer is barred from doing chalitza, and therefore our mission, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda, following that, is saying a tumtum of necessity is going to be a Swiss Hammer, therefore he doesn't do chalitza. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ami, my Ovid Rabbi Yehuda la tumtum de Biri. Well, what would Rabbi Yehuda do? How would he understand the case of a tumtum in the city of Biri? The city of Biri is a little town in the Galil. It's a suburb of Tzfas. It's actually, it has a little more fame in Jewish history to that because it's the place where the Beis Yosef completed writing the Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, so there was a tumtum who lived over there. They sat him on a chair to do an operation on him. The ikra, and they tore open the membrane that was covering his evorim, and he got married. In fact, Rabbi Abraham Minahor, one of the Rishonim who has a Pirush on our Gemara, says that the word oisra bei kurse is actually meant a double meaning. Number one, it means they sat him down to do the operation, but also kurse is like a fancy chair, such as you put a chosin on. So it means, in other words, they married him off. And the ikra, and sure enough, they found that he's a male, but oilad sheva bnin, and he had seven sons. So according to Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, who says that he's a Swiss Hammer, how would Rabbi Yehuda understand that? And the answer is, Rabbi Yehuda would answer, you know what, Chazer Abon of Ma'ayin Heim, go check out where his children are from, because I say that a tumtum of necessity is a Swiss Hammer, and if his wife had seven children, it wasn't from him.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's the point I was trying to bring up. You previously that you didn't understand.
Okay, so before we were talking about an adjurgus, now we're talking about tumtum. But again, what we're saying is, a tumtum still has
the principle is the same.
So, no, an adjurgus and a tumtum are two different things. I mean, neither of them are going to have children. That's neither here nor there. Again, the fact that he can't have children is a
sign. That's the point.
No, it's not the point. It means, one second. It means because of that, he doesn't do chalitza or yibum. Fine. But when it comes to regular marriage, he still there's a point for him to get married, because even if he can't have children, still like toiv hayosa adam levadoi. So in the case of a tumtum and an androgynous, because they're a suffix, then you have to figure out whom they're marrying. They're still allowed to marry any regular bas yisrael. They're not a pseudo doctor or kris shofa. But the fact that
so
they
that's
can't have
my
children,
question. Oh, why?
What do you mean, why? Because, again, it's better for a man not to be alone.
But for Sris, we said he's not allowed because he cannot have children, but he can marry Yeret.
No. Stop a second. We said that a Sris Chama cannot do Yibum or Chalitza, and we said that a Sris Adam can't marry a Bas Yisrael. That's all. Those are the sum total of the restrictions. Other than that...
A Sris Chama cannot marry a Bas Yisrael?
I didn't say a Sris Chama. A Sris Adam can't marry a Bas Yisrael. You want to try to find reasons for the mitzvahs? You can find them. I mean, one obvious reason is because the Torah wants to discourage people from doing such things. A Sris Chama is born that way, or a Tum Tum, or an Andrevinus are born that way. There's no doing it, but the Torah would want to discourage people. You know, in those times, it was very common for Goyish kings, for example, to castrate their servants so that they would serve to the king exclusively, or something like that. So the Torah doesn't want you to do that. There's an Isser in the Torah. There's an Isser Sirus anyway. There's a separate Isser in the Torah. You're not allowed to castrate any male, not only person, but even animal. And therefore, so the Torah would say that if a person did do that, then he's also to marry a Bas Yisrael. But that has nothing to do with the Sris Chama. Okay, continue.
Does the Torah talk explicitly about an androgynous and Tum Tum anyway?
Yes, so you were talking specifically about an androgynous and a Tum Tum. So there's no issue of them marrying. There's no issue in terms of the Dinim of Psua Daka. There's no issue of them marrying, because the fact is that let them marry. The only question is, are they marrying men or are they marrying women? Which now we're going to get back to that point. So Tanya, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, Tum Tum lo yachlot. So Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says a Tum Tum should not do chalitza. Now he's the son of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that he doesn't do chalitza. So Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying similarly, he doesn't do chalitza. Shema yikora benimta Sris Chama, because if the membrane is cut open over there, he might turn out to be a Sris Chama. What kind of a statement is that? Otu called him a kara zohar habi. What do you mean? Anytime you tear it open, he's guaranteed to be a man? No, it's a 50-50 chance. So the Rabbi Yosef, it sounds like Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying the only concern is whether it's a Sris. But why don't we have to be concerned that he might be a woman? And obviously a woman can't do chalitza to another woman. So that's hachikama. What he means is like that. Shemi yikara v'nimtza nekeva. It might be that when you cut it open, you find that he's nekeva. V'afilu nimtza zacher. And furthermore, you have to consider, even if it turns out to be a zacher, shemi yimotis Sris Chama, then it also might turn out that he's going to be a Sris Chama. Which Tosfos explains, in other words, that it's not, he's not exactly saying like his father of Yehuda that he's definitely going to be a Sris, because then there's no reason for him to mention the whole thing. He should just say Tum Tum Areu Kasris, like his father did. The fact that he's saying that he might be a Sris Chama implies, Tosfos says, that he's slightly arguing with his father. He's saying it's not a guarantee that he's going to be a Sris, but still you have to consider he might probably be a woman. So Gemara says my benayu. So what's the practical difference between Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda? Now, of course, there's a practical difference in terms of whether, if you have this guy from Biri who had seven children, whether we have to be concerned that the kids are mamzerim. But the Gemara is talking about in terms of them doing chalitza, where both of them are saying you shouldn't do chalitza. So what's the practical difference between them? Amar Rava lifso b'mokim achin, b'lachat shaloi b'mokim achin, ikka b'nai. The nachmina between them would be, first of all, what if there are other brothers? So now, what happens if the Tum Tum did chalitza? Rabbi Yehuda says that he's a Sris, meaning, in other words, there's no question that he's a Sris. Well, there's no question. Either he's a woman, or even if Nikra, that he's definitely a Sris. Since a Sris is completely out of the picture as far as Chalitza, then therefore it means that his Chalitza means nothing. And therefore he didn't passel her for any of the other brothers. If one of the other brothers wants to give him with her, then they can do it gesundheit. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, would be saying it's a suffix, Shema Yimotze Sris, so he's not necessarily a Sris, therefore it might be a valid chalitza. So that's one nachmina. And also, Lachlitz Shaloi B'Mokom Achim, suppose that he's the only surviving brother. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need anything. She's mutter to marry whoever she wants. Her husband is dead. The one brother that he has is not necessarily a brother, or even if he is, he's definitely a Sris, and therefore he doesn't have to do chalitza with her. So she's potter, there's no zika, and she can go marry whoever she wants. According to Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, she's going to need chalitza, misafet. So that's the nachmina. Okay, now getting back to the matter of androgynous. Omer of Shmuel by Yehuda, Omer of Abba Achor, Rabbi Yehuda by Zavdi, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. If a man has relations with an androgynous, then he's chayev in whichever of the two places that he does it. Meaning, so we know, an androgynous has, by definition, he has the genitals of both a zocher and a nekeva. So that means he has a nafus. He has the genitals of a nekeva, and therefore it's possible for another man to have relations with him via that. And then he... That's what we're going to talk about, chayev nisa, we're going to say. So in other words, we know the Torah tells us that zachar is sishkav mishkavetsha. If a man has relations with another zachar, then there's skila involved. So now Rav is saying that with an androgynous, you have not only when it's done in the way that a man would usually do with another man, meaning from the back, but also if he does it using the nafos, using the particular part that this androgynous has unique. Nevertheless, you'd be chayv skila. So the Gemara says, "Maisvei, I have a contradiction." The Mishnah said, and actually in a Braise it goes into more details. Rabbi Eliezer Omer androgynous chayov nol skila to the zacher. Rabbi Eliezer says that you chayv skila for relations with an androgynous, but by medra amum v'zachos shaloi, but only when you're doing it the way that it would be normally. Only when he's doing it in the way that it would normally be done with another male, meaning in the back. But if he's going through the nakvus, then it's also, but it's at least potter from Misa, because the fact is that's not the part that a normal zohar has. So who is Rav following? The answer is The answer is that Rav is following a different tana. The tanya, Rav Simoi Yoyma, Androgynous, Chayav Nolav Skila, Mishtei Mekoymus. Rav Simoi says, not like Rav Eliezer, that in fact you are Chayav in both places. So the Gemara says, my time is Reb Simoi. So why does Reb Simoi say that? Reb Eliezer, we understand easily enough. Given that, we can't consider that your person should be chayv skila for the nafus would be inconsistent. If you're considering him a zacher, then there's only the one way as with a zacher. If you're considering him a nekeva, then there's no iser of mishkab zacher in the nafus. There could be other iser, but we're not dealing with those. But why is Reb Simoi saying that even in the nafus he'd be chayv nisa? Amar Rava, Barham Duri Azdrali. So Rava says, Barham Duri, explain to me, because the Pasuk says, the es zocho lois sishkav mishkavetisha, with a male, don't lie the lyings of a woman, in plural, two lyings, implying, ezer zocher, she has b'shnei mishkavis, what kind of zocher has both kinds available, heviem as androgynous. So therefore, it's referring to an androgynous, and the Pasuk is telling you that either one would make him chayiv misa. So in other words, so the Rabbanon, so what are the Rabbanon answer to that, meaning Rabbi Eliezer, who disagrees with that, he would say, Apagav de Ispe Shnei true, this particular person, this androgynous, has two of them, but Es Zohar, but after all, the Pasuk says Es Zohar. So it means when a person has Shnei Mishkavis, then only when it's Derech Zachrusay is Ichayiv Misa, but not Derech Nachrusay. So in other words, the Torah, I agree, says Rabbi Eliezer, that the Pasuk is telling you about that. The Pasuk is telling you specifically about an androgynous. It's not talking about a regular zacher, because a regular zacher doesn't have mishkevei in plural. But nevertheless, it's telling you, because it uses the word ve'es zacher, it's telling you only the one mishkev would be chayiv misa, not the other one. Interesting point, by the way, is that Eben Ezra on the Pasuk brings that. Now you have the question, why does it say mishkevei in plural if we're talking about a regular zacher who only has one? The Eben Ezra on the Pasuk over there brings an interesting thing from Rabbi Hanano. He says, to Fa'enfer, we could be talking about a man who made himself an artificial nachos. So, like, unfortunately, you have nowadays this whole transgender thing or whatever. So therefore, the Pasuk would be warning you about that. The Eben Ezra says it's not really necessary to say that at all. You can equally well say that Mishkevei is just a lotion of it, that it means, in other words, we're talking about there is only one method, and it's still called Mishkevei. Anyway. So the Rachamim say Afgav Beisvei Shnei Mishkavis Es Zocher. See, the fact is it says Es Zocher, so therefore it means that we're limiting it only to the Zachrus, not the Nachrus. Okay, the Gemara asks V'Rabbanan Zocher Greider Menalu. Well, if we're saying that the Pasuk the Es Zocher is referring to an androgynous, and we have the Machlokas from Simoi and Rabbi Eliezer, whether it means Shnei Mishkavis or only one, but where are we learning that a regular Zocher should be also in the first place, and that there should be a Chiyuv Skila? The answer is mi isha. They're learning it from the word mishkevei isha, or hagoyis habach actually changes it. It's supposed to be rather that we learn it from the word that we learn it from the word ves. In other words, it's called as es zacher. It says ves zacher. Therefore, we can learn that it means a regular zacher as well. What about the Isha Shaloika Daukum Nalu? What about, we know throughout Shas, we had earlier in the Masechta, that Bia Shaloika Daukum of the woman is considered Bia for almost all purposes in Halacha. Where do we know that from? And the answer is, Mi V'Isha, because it says V'Isha, or again, Agoyis Habach changes it to, it's supposed to be Me'Isha, the fact that it says Mishka V'Isha, so therefore that teaches us that that kind of Mishka from the Shaloika Daukum with a woman would also be considered, would also be considered Bia. So ultimately, we learn them all out from the same pasuk. We learn out a regular zachar. We learn out that an isha, that the shnei mishkavis beisha, that there are two ways with a regular woman that are considered bia. And we also learn that with an androgynous, there you have machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Simoi, whether a person is chayv nisa for only one of the two mishkavis or for both of them. Okay. The Gemara says, Amar of Shizbi, Amar of Chista, loy lakol, Amar of Eliezer, androgynous zachar mali. Now, it's not, you shouldn't think that Rabbi Eliezer says that an androgynous is considered a male for all purposes. The fact that he's saying in the Mishnah, Chayovin Olof Skila Kazachar, could lead you to think that he thinks that an androgynous is considered a Zachar for all purposes. Definitely not, says Rabbi Chista. She imata oimer came, because if you were going to say that, v'mukdoshin yikdash, then consider the case of a bird or an animal that a person declared as a korban. If we said that it's considered a zachar, then you would say that it's able to get a degree of kedusha. You would say it'd be considered a baal mum, but it would still have a degree of kedusha. And umenolon deloy kodesh. And how do we know, in fact, that Rabbi Eliezer says that not? So the Tanan Abanan hanuba. Now we have like this. The Torah tells us a concept called a concept of nivlas oif tover. That specific din that applies to a dead kosher bird. So this is a kosher species of bird that's dead, not with shechita. If a person eats it, as he's swallowing it, he becomes an avatoma. As it's going down his throat, he becomes an avatoma. The clothing that he wears becomes tamei, and his clothing becomes tamei as a rishon batoma. And therefore, the pasuk says that he has to dip himself and his clothes in a mikvah. So now, on the other hand, you have like this. A bird korban, when a bird ola or chatos is brought, then you don't shecht it, you do melicha. The kohen cuts through the neck with a fingernail. Now, normally that would make it nevela, but in the case of a korban, it's allowed. But what if it was possible to be brought as a korban? Then the melicha has no effect, then it's still considered a nevela. So the Braisa that we're going to list over here lists a bunch of cases where the bird is possible to begin with to be brought as a korban. Hanuva, a bird that was sodomized by a person, v'hamukta, or that was designated to be used as a korban for Avodah Zarah, v'hanevad, or it itself was actually worshipped as Avodah Zarah, v'ha'esnan, or it was used as the fee to give to a zoyna, umechir, or it was used as in exchange for a dog, where the Torah tells us both those things are also to be brought as a korban, v'tumtum v'androgynous, or if the bird and the tumtum were androgynous. All of those, if melika was done to them as a korban, the melika has no effect to make it because it can't be brought as a korban. Therefore, matamim begodim abeis abliya. So therefore, when a person swallows them, then it's like swallowing any nivlas oif tahor, and therefore he and his clothes become tamim. But Rabbi Eliezer, matumtum androgynous, ain't matamim begodim abeis abliya. But Rabbi Eliezer says that not. Shahoyer Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kol Makom Shenema Zohar in the Keva. Whenever the Pasuk says Zohar and the Keva, after Motzi Tumtum Androgynous Reminehim, then it means you have to exclude a Tumtum and an Androgynous, because since the Pasuk is mentioning Zohar in the Keva, then it means nothing else. Only a Zohar Vade and only in the Keva Vados. But the oif, hoyuvalei nema by zachor in a keva. But since by a bird korban, the Torah never tells us that it has to be limited to zachor in a keva, iatamotzi tumtum androgynous meminehim. So therefore, there's no basis to exclude a tumtum androgynous. Therefore, in other words, in effect, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that a tumtum and an androgynous, to be exact, in other words, what happens is, therefore, the malika has an effect to the extent that therefore he's not tomei from eating it, because it's not considered a neveva in that sense. So we see that Rabbi Eliezer holds that an androgynous is not considered a zachar. Otherwise, he would say it has the regular dinim of a korban, and the fact is he's saying that it does not. So he's saying, in other words, he's saying it doesn't have the kedusha of a korban. However, it doesn't have the kedusha of a korban. Tosfos says maybe only derabanan. But the point is, it's still, the malika has an effect that now it's not considered nevela anymore, and therefore it's not matame a person when he eats it. Had Rabbi Eliezer said that an androgynous is considered a zohar badai, then he would say that the same rules apply to it as any other bird for a korban. And it would be possible, and therefore it would be matame the person when he eats it. Omer of Nachmi took Achanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we have a Mishnah to that effect that Rabbi Eliezer says that an adjurigunus is not necessarily considered a zohar. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Hakilayim, if you have a bird that's kilayim two different species, which is also possible to be brought as a korban, or trefa, or a bird that's a trefa, the yotzi dofen, or one that was born, or now we're not just talking about birds, we're talking about animals as well. So for example, you have a hybrid between a sheep and a goat, or a trefa, the yotzi dofen, or if it was born by C-section, tumtum vandrogenus, or if the animals are tumtum vandrogenus, loik doshin v'loimakadshin. They can't get the kedusha of a korban, and they can't make something else, meaning through tmura, become kaddish. V'amashmul, it means loik doshin v'tmura, v'loimakadshin v'oisa tmura. What it means is that, now obviously, Rashi says, to make them hektish to begin with, they wouldn't get kedusha taguf, because if nothing else, they were balmum. But even, let's say, for example, a person had a regular animal for a korban, and then he did a tmura, as we had in this past week's parasha, where he said, I'm exchanging this animal for this one. Now, if the second animal is a balmum, then it's still chal on it, because after all, the pasuk says toy v'rah. But over here it's not, and here it's not, and it does not get kedusha because it's even worse than a baal mum, because it's completely out of the picture as far as a korban. So Rashi says, in other words, that now that's the point. In other words, the Gemara explains Rashi brings from Gemaras and other places that it's not kodesh as far as that it doesn't become a tmura, and it's not makadesh, meaning that if you makdish it and then you use it and then you made a tmura with them, then they don't produce a tmura. So for example, the Gemara explains over there that let's say, for example, you were makdish an animal, then it became a trefa, or if you were makdish the baby in the womb and it came out by C-section, then we say that it's not shy to becoming a korban, and therefore tmura wouldn't work with it. When it comes to kilayim and tumtum v'androgynous, then it would be, in other words, that you had to be makdish the mother, and that you were makdish the mother, then a tumtum or an androgynous came out. So now the baby has intrinsic kedusha, or actually it doesn't, even to the extent that if you were to try to make a tmura with that baby, it wouldn't work. So we see, in other words, that kedusha cannot be chal at all. The kedusha of a korban cannot at all be chal on a tumtum androgynous. So we see, in other words, that even Rabbi Eliezer is not saying that it's considered an actual zohar. So only uniquely when it comes to the matter of having relations, only then is he saying that it's considered a zohar to the extent that there's skila, but not in connection with other demons. Okay, we said in the Mishnah of Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Chayovin of Skila for Zohar, that Rabbi Eliezer said a person is high of Skila for having relations with an androgynous like a man. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rebbe, Kshalachti Lumad Torah, Eitzer Rabbi Lozim and Shamua. When I went to learn Torah by Rabbi Lozim and Shamua, Chavru Olei Talmidov, Ketana Golem Shal Beis Bukya. His Talmidim gathered against me and wouldn't let me in, like the chickens, like the roosters of Beis Bukia. So Rashi explained, these roosters are very tough creatures. Even normally, roosters don't easily accept strangers. The ones in Beis Bukia were extra aggressive like that, and they wouldn't easily let a strange rooster into their area. So similarly, the Talmidim would not let Rebbe so easily into the Beis Medrash. V'lo hinichuni lumet ela dover echad b'mishna sein. They only allowed me to learn one detail in our Mishnah, namely this that we said, Rabbi Eliezer Oyman, Dragonus, Hayovan al Skila Kazafer. Now, there are other Gemaras. Now, first of all, why would they do that? The Yerushalmi over here actually brings two reasons. Number one, the Talmudim of Rabbi Lazar Ben Shamua were concerned that Rebbe might reveal more things about what Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua holds on this topic, which they didn't want him to. They want, it's one thing that he's going to quote what Rabbi Lazar is saying, but they didn't want, in the Beis Medrash over there, they're going to be discussing various other things about the dinim of an androgynous, which they felt that those have to be kept in the Beis Medrash, and they didn't want it to be publicized for whatever reason, and they were concerned that Rebbe would publicize it. The other reason, the Gemara says, is because they felt that he's not ready to be a Talmud of Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. And therefore, they wouldn't let him in because they felt he's not of the caliber to be a Talmud. With that said, though, there are other Gemaras where it comes out that Rebbe did learn by Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. For example, there's a Gemara in Eruvin where Rebbe says that we used to sit six per Amma. We sat so crowded that there were six of us in every Amma. You think of the old days in 770. It's easy enough to visualize,
it's about Meir.
Yeah, so it comes out from that and from various other Gemaras that Rebbe did in fact learn by Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. So there's a Tosfos in Menachos, which is one of those places, which says that maybe what it is, so we're talking, this was originally, they wouldn't let him in. Afterwards, they realized that he's of a caliber, and he's not going to reveal things that he shouldn't, and then they allowed him in to learn more. Dodis sort of showing him a safer on Jewish history. He says maybe it's a, you don't even have to say that. He says maybe what Rebbe means is, in terms of statements from Mishnayos, this is the only one that I learned from Rebbe Lazar ben Shamua. But then I learned by him various other things, various other statements of Tanoim and Braises and explanations of Gemara and whatnot. But actual Mishnayos, it was so crowded that they wouldn't let him sit peacefully to be able to learn the Mishnayos.
So
okay, Hadron Alachar.
Thank you. Yeah, question when you